Welcome to Listening with Leaders. I'm Doug Knoll, lawyer turned peacemaker. I teach executive leaders how to listen to emotions rather than words so that they can become the leaders everyone wants to follow. And I teach those same leaders how to be authentically present, available, and connected to their families, despite being insanely busy. I have learned that we are 98% emotional and only 2% rational. Learning how to listen to emotions is, in my experience, the foundational skill of life. Stick around to the end of the show, and I'll reveal how you can be on our next guest in 15 to 20 minutes. So let's get started. So Jim Farrelly, welcome to Listen with Leaders. You are the, you're the principal and founder of Bellwether, found at bellwetherhub.com. Make sure to get my notes right. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself first, personally, a little bit about your personal journey, and then I want to talk a little bit about Bellwether and what you do.
Sure. So I run an organization called Bellwether. Our main focus is really twofold. One is rewriting the script on executive development, but what it really comes down to is how do you help people prepare for change when you don't know what change is coming? And it was really formulated based on my time in corporate. It's been about 20 years. I started in learning and development, corporate training, and that evolved into a career in the financial services industry where I was doing executive communications, chief of staff roles, strategic planning. And I really earned my chops, or really baptism by fire, I guess you could say, was doing executive communications during the financial crisis in 2008, which was like the worst, you know.
I remember.
Perfectly encapsulates wrong place, wrong time, doing executive communications and financial services. Right. But what I learned now on reflection was that it was incredible learning for me in terms of getting access to the CEOs and the executive suite in terms of how they handled real change that they didn't anticipate, and seeing the executives who were successful had a few things in place that the other executives didn't, and they were able to make the really good decisions that they had to make when this unknown change was coming, and they were able to communicate that and make the decisions necessary to really save the company, get the employees on board. And my time in corporate was fine, but it didn't really hit me in the way that I wanted it to hit me. And so now I'm going on 8 years, 9 years. I launched Bellwether to focus on coaching and consulting.
So what do you think it is that's unique about you that you bring to the work?
A few different things. One is the experience I have primarily in corporate with the executive communications, the access that I was so fortunate to have at such a young age, doing PR, executive communications, helping them formulate their strategic strategy, whatever the strategy is going to be, the communication strategy, all of that. So that really informs a lot of what I do. But on a personal side of it, I've been on the receiving end of, the reason I started the coaching business was I was very unhappy with the way the coaching product was put out and the way that it exists. And yeah. I feel like it's been commoditized in this way that's, there's no accountability on the side of the coaches. And I felt I needed to change that. And so we have a guarantee. We don't take clients unless we can guarantee an end date. We guarantee success metrics. And if we can't hit those metrics, you get the money back. We have to put accountability on us. And that's been a significant differentiator for us as we work with clients and organizations and executives to say, look, at the end of these 6 months, you're going to be in this place that we agree on. And if we can't get you there, we're going to end it soon. And it's happened. We've fired a couple clients where we just knew it wasn't going to work, or we knew that it wasn't going to play out the way that we had thought based on contextual changes and everything else. We say, all right, let's cut it here. We know this isn't going to go forward. Here's, you know, the portion of the money back. And people appreciate that. And they'll call back because they know that when we sign up to do something, we're going to be successful.
Well, that's integrity. And I mean that the basis of any good business is based on that. You're right. The coaching, especially the executive leadership coaching businesses, there's no barrier to entry. So every Tom, Dick, and Harry can say, I'm an executive coach.
Right.
And how do you, what's the market differentiation?
Right. I'm certified by Skippy McGee's kind of whatever certification, right?
Exactly.
And when I was leaving corporate, that was one of the things, you know, I'd put together 3 or 4 business plans. I'd gone to an executive coach. And all of the plans I put together, I recognized I needed some kind of credibility to do that. And so one of them was to set up a community center. One was a travel business. One, you know, there were all kinds of things. But I saw that Columbia University had an executive coaching program, which was part business school, part teacher's college. it was the premier one. I said, that's the one. And that was phenomenal in getting me set up.
You learned a lot.
I learned a lot. I didn't realize how much I love learning until I did that.
Wow. Wow. So when you talk about executive communication, what are you referring to?
So executive communications, my role in corporate for executive communications ran the gamut. It was investor relations. It was public relations. It was employee communications. And it evolved. And now the executive communications I work evolves into executive presence. And how do you get into the C-suite? How do you communicate to the C-suite? So it goes two ways. There's communications in multiple different ways. And so we'll coach people within the organization full vertical on how to communicate to different levels of the organization, because you need to understand whether it's enterprise-wide, whether it's team-wide, whether it's individual contributor-wide, how do you communicate based on what a communication model actually looks like? And most executives have never gotten that understanding of this is how communication actually works. It's not about sending a message. It's about how it's received as well.
Right. I never thought about that, but you would, I can see that the way you would communicate to a team is going to be, you're going to provide different kinds of information with different density of information, as opposed to higher in the organization where the communication, the information is going to be less dense and more summarized. And there's going to be a call to action of some kind.
Absolutely. And your value going into the, walking into the C-suite to present to them is you have to have done the thinking work for them.
That's right.
Because they're not thinking, if an executive starts getting into the weeds, you're going to have a bad day. Right. Because they don't have the context to really understand why these decisions were made. And that's your role in the organization. And I'll coach the executives to say, all right, what are the right questions to be asking so that they can bring their best and they get, you know, what are the expectations in terms of what this meeting is going to be and how do you set that up? A lot of times the learning and development around that is really surface level. And nobody really talks it. They just talk about how to put together a 50-page PowerPoint deck. And it's not, it doesn't work that way.
Right.
And, you know, an executive lives here thinking 3/4 in the future, a year, 2 years, 3 years in the future. How do you summarize that into a way to say, this is what's most important for you to make the most effective decision today?
Right.
That's your role in communicating at that level.
That's tricky because especially, I mean, we're talking about the rapidity of change and decision-making around the uncertainty of the future. I teach a course in decision-making under uncertainty and stress at Pepperdine University. And forecasting into the future is, you know, is always problematic. So I think that one of the skills that would be essential is how to assess the possibilities, but without letting cognitive biases distort your decision-making process.
Absolutely. And it's
learning how to do that to me seems to be foundational to what you must be teaching.
Foundational. And it's so important. I argue now that goals are important, but not nearly as important as the ability to make effective decisions in the moment, because Absolutely. All of these initiatives in corporate are outdated before they could be finished. And so how do you take what you've done to make the changes that you need to make so that it's still relevant, so the work isn't lost?
Right.
And to do that, a lot of the work we have to do, I mean, I say macro change requires a focus on micro individuals. How do you shed the assumptions that you're bringing to the table? How do you ask really good questions so that you're able to get the expertise and perspectives that are relevant so that you can make the decisions in the moment that you have to make?
So this takes some pretty good critical thinking skills, I think.
It takes pretty good thinking skills. It takes pretty good question skills from an objective standpoint. And it takes pretty critical, I hate the term vulnerability, but you know, how do you define vulnerability and humility? I think many people have misinterpreted because it's become such a buzzword. Right. But how do you ask a legitimate, objective question? And I always ask my executives, nobody ever has a good answer, is how do you define a question? And nobody knows what the answer to that is. We're so focused on listening skills, less focused on how do you ask a really good question? And a question is a request for information where you legitimately do not know the answer. And we're trained our entire lives to be right. We're trained as executives to have the right answers and to give the direction. So how do you take a step back, shed the assumptions and judgment, and ask a truly objective question so that other people are elevated in the right kind of way to provide the value that they want to provide?
And that gets to the vulnerability you're talking about, because you have to be, you're going to be ignorant, and you don't have to have all the right answers, and you don't have to be Mr. Smarty Pants. You got to sit back and say, I don't know. Can you help me?
That's right. And doing, I mean, when you get something like a pandemic hitting, or right. you get something where people are now working from home, you don't have the full playbook on many of these things.
Right.
And you could draw on your experience, but the world in 5 years, your experience in 1990 or early 2000s is almost going to be irrelevant with AI and everything else. And so right. how do you get these different perspectives to kind of inform your experience so that you can bring the real kind of value?
So how do you get your clients to do the mind shift that it sounds like it takes to be able to start being effective at this?
So the work has to be done by them. And when I talk about accountability on a coaching perspective, I talk about accountability in three different ways. Accountability has to come from the organization so that they can set up the expectations of what a coaching engagement should look like, or the workshop or whatever it is. What do we expect out of this from the individual going through it and the coach? And they're typically paying the bill. So that's their accountability. What's the accountability on the person being coached? How are they defining what their success is going to be at the end of this coaching engagement? So that, because they're ultimately left holding the bag. At the end of any coaching engagement, they're left with the decisions that they're making. And so how do we build up, from a personal capability standpoint, the openness to say, this is now my responsibility as an executive to change this behavior, to ask these types of questions, to get the best out of my individual people and teach them how to ask really good questions and do that. And so the accountability is really three ways. And that's why, you know, we have fired clients, because the accountability wasn't there on the individual,
right.
where they've just dropped off and we say, sorry, this isn't going to work. Right. That's right.
Yeah. I love the idea, because when I'm teaching people, executives, I always tell them, you've got to be teaching two levels down. Always teach you want to be teaching the people who are going to replace you.
Absolutely. You're teaching the people you want to, and how do adults learn? We think about teaching as an external focus. I'm telling you what to do.
Right. No.
But it doesn't work that way. Individuals learn by doing and by experiencing. And right. you know, I tell anybody, you find me one executive who has to walk into the CEO's office to say that they missed a target, they will never make that mistake again.
That's right.
And so that's how they learn, and that's how they develop, and that's how they build right. that expertise that we all have as executives. Right.
And then learning how to pass that expertise down. I think the problem we've been seeing with the Great Resignation, or whatever it is, with all these people leaving, is leaders at the top are not taking the time to develop the people down below, and people are fed up, tired of it.
Yeah, I think people are fed up, and we're seeing also. I just had a lunch the other day talking about a CEO of a beverage company is so frustrated with individuals' inability to understand what work is. I think we need to, I mean, and it sounds silly, but when I'm talking to executives, we're redefining, you know, what do you expect from people?
Right.
It's not a person sitting at a desk for 40 hours. It's how are you getting them to articulate their value? When we talk about entrepreneurs in residence, I worked in corporate and I worked a lot of hours and I did good work, but I didn't really know what work was until I had my own business. Right. Where the accountability ends with me. It's not that I could push it off and push paper and do this little work and, you know, whatever. How do we teach that? And what's the reason to do that type of work for individuals? And what's the reward? And what's the consequence? And what are the expectations? And we're revisiting that, because the way that work has manifested over the last 30 or 40 years, a person comes into this job and then we do some layoffs and more people come in and they're sitting in their cubes and they're doing the same processes over and over. Where's the process or review to say, we don't need to do this anymore?
That's right.
And many executives, in the conversations we're having, we're doing this philosophical discussion. And I did this in finance. If the market goes up 50% or down 50%, who are you letting go? What initiatives are you stopping? We're doing that now, where if we let go 50%, 80% of the workforce, could this company survive? And most people are finding the answer is yes, because we're doing so much ridiculous work and we're just, you know, the power has been with the people. A lot with the pandemic, I'm working from home, I'm getting my flexibility, and it's very good, and they're defining their boundaries. But the pendulum has swung. It's got to swing back a little bit for the benefit of the corporate,
right.
or the benefit of pushing the business forward. And where that balance and swing goes is an interesting exercise.
Yeah, I know that in the legal profession, there's a lot of senior partners complain about the fact that young lawyers are coming into the profession not willing to put the hours in that it requires to learn how to be a good lawyer and to do what the client needs. It's been a real challenge.
Yeah, it's a real, real challenge. And getting that motivation.
That's right.
Most people don't appreciate. And I think part of it is, I mean, you open up TikTok and you see all the videos of people making buku bucks in like 2 hours a week, and it's all a bunch of BS, and nobody's really, you know, nobody is really talking about the amount of work it takes
to get that done,
to get it done, to be sitting at the C-suite table, to get, you want to get to that table. A lot of the work I'm doing with middle management, you know, I want to be a chief marketing officer, say, all right, give me your board deck next week on what the future is going to be. And they can't do it. Right. And they don't realize what they don't know and how much work still needs to be done. And then that's a nice baseline where we say, okay, now we could do that kind of work. Let's do that experience and get that work going. And it completely changes their trajectory because they have a different understanding of what's expected.
It's kind of amazing that people don't understand this. I mean, they don't pick it. I guess business school doesn't teach it and they don't learn it in college. How do you plot a career trajectory?
Right. And that was my problem in corporate, if I'm honest, is, you know, I had the president of the business come to me one day, said, you can run any business at this company if you want. I will make sure it happens. And I said, okay. I didn't know. I couldn't give any direction on where I want to go. I didn't know because I didn't know the questions I had to ask. I didn't know how to ask for help. I didn't know who to look at for a mentor and get those types of questions. And, you know, when I'm going full vertical about your people, you know, I hear a lot in coaching. I don't get the feedback I need. Well, you haven't asked for the feedback in the right kind of way. And so how are you, you know, your responsibility to get the feedback, and people haven't been taught this or told this. And they assume that we're told our entire lives, work hard and people will notice.
No,
nobody's going to notice.
Right.
And they notice because they're focusing on them and getting their work done and promoting themselves. And so we need this healthy selfishness in terms of getting what you need and taking the credit for what you do so that you can elevate yourself. That's ultimately your responsibility.
I love what you're saying. Brilliant. Just a brilliant approach. No wonder.
Oh, good. All right.
No, you're making a great case for the work that you do. Very refreshing to hear this. So let's pivot to listening a little bit. I'm all about, as a peacemaker, a lawyer turned peacemaker, I'm all about listening. Tell me, I know that you said before you thought that questions are more important about listening, but let's talk more about that. Let's tease that out a little bit. So listening is important, I presume. How many of your people really, your clients really know how to listen?
Not many. I would say not many. Well, they learn to listen.
Right.
And I think effective listening is you're listening and hearing are two different things.
That's right.
Listening with intentionality is very important. And in any communication, there's two ways, right? Listening is one aspect of communication, but it's a give and take. And so how do you ask the questions to really get the information that you need so that two people are simpatico in terms of what they're communicating to each other?
Let me just throw this out. You can ask a brilliant question, but if you're not listening to the response, how do you know what's coming back at you?
And how do you take the time to internalize that
That
your next follow-up question is incredibly good and valid?
That's right.
Without the judgment, without the assumptions, without any of the other things that, you know, oftentimes we ask a question and we're ready for our follow-up before the person answers.
Right.
Whereas right. Yeah. Right. But when we eliminate assumption and judgment and ask objective questions where you truly don't know the answer, we become learners. And I have this theory and I joke about it. Kids are so happy because they're constantly learning. Adults are so miserable because we're supposed to have the answers.
Right.
But how do you turn that into a learning mindset to say, you know, tell me more? My favorite question that I learned at Columbia was, tell me more. It doesn't even have a question mark.
Right.
But tell me what's a request for information. Give me more about your thought process. What got you to this point?
Right.
And then you could pepper that with more questions and you could listen to where they're coming from, the perspective, because the person coming to you, telling you a story or telling you whatever initiative they're working on, whatever it is, they have context that you don't have. And so we need to understand some of that context in the right kind of way and create an environment in which they can answer in the most productive way.
Right.
To do that so that you can listen and internalize and inform them of additional context they may not have thought of or whatever. That's the conversation that typically has to happen.
So in your coaching process, you're teaching people how to do this, how to ask those objective questions and then listen and evaluate the information that they're receiving.
Absolutely. And I really like the one I really like to teach. There's a process called ORID. I don't know if you know it, but it's there's a book called The Art of Focused Conversation, and they talk about four types of questions to lead people through, and they're all objective. The first are objective questions. What are we looking to accomplish in this meeting?
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
That's everybody go around the room. Everybody, are we all on the same page? Right. It's objective.
Yeah.
Awesome. No judgment. From there, it's reflective. who's dealt with something like this before? Tell me that story, right? That's their perspective. We get the different types of inputs and everything else. Interpretive questions. What does that mean for us today? Okay, that means this. Well, what about this? And you get their perspectives on that. And then decisionals. All right, what decisions can we make based on the conversation we just had?
And what decision making process is most appropriate here?
And what decision? Exactly. And there are countless questions within those four categories that would lead your type of question, whether it's a managerial review or launching a new initiative or launching a product or reviewing a client, meaning whatever it is, any scenario, you follow this process and you could fill in hundreds of questions to lead the discussion. Because ultimately, as a leader, your job is one, to facilitate that discussion and then make the decision necessary to push the business forward. That's really your role, not to get into the weeds or anything else. Everybody else's responsibility is to bring the information that they have so that they could fill in the gaps.
Right.
But your facilitation in a discussion and listening to those perspectives to inform your decision-making, that's ultimately your role as an executive.
So I take it part of what you teach and coach is how to do that precisely, how to facilitate effective meetings.
Facilitate successful meetings. And I'll give people homework to say, go test this out
right.
on smaller scales.
Right.
And it's incredibly uncomfortable because it's a whole new way to do things. So every time we're trying so hard to say, well, this is why you're wrong. And this is why I think you need to change your perspectives. And you have experience as an executive and you are a teacher. And you can say, all right, that's from where you're sitting, understanding where a person's sitting. There's an old quote, we don't see things as they are, we see things as we are. And that's, you know, our perspective and another person's perspective. We're open to more information. We see more information and we see a bigger picture. And our job is to facilitate that and create an environment so that people are comfortable sharing their perspective. And, is it okay for a person around your table to say, I wasn't aware of that, and I'll put that in and I'll come back to the next meeting with something.
That's creating emotional and psychological safety.
100%. Yep.
Absolutely critical for functionality in a team. And most people don't even recognize that. They don't even know the importance of psychological safety.
They don't. And I mentioned psychological safety to so many executives and they look at me like I've got three heads.
Right.
And then it sounds so soft. It just sounds so soft. When I explain what it is,
right.
They're like, well, of course I want that. That's what I do. I say, no, that's not what you do. That's, you know, it's, you want to do that, but you know, the little micro conversations and, you know, a high school kid could do this and rah, 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 rah. And, it doesn't really manifest in the right kind of way.
Right. What's always interesting to me is when executives say, oh, that's too soft. And they don't even recognize that the term soft skills was developed by the U.S. Army Training Command in the 1960s to describe all of the skills a commander had to have to control a battle space. And it wasn't shooting a rifle or driving a tank. It was critical thinking and being able to communicate and being emotionally intelligent and having clear decision-making authority. I mean, all these things, those are all the U.S. Army soft skills.
Right.
Absolutely every executive has to master. And yet we hear all the time the pejorative, oh, that's too soft.
It's too soft. But if you take a look at the change that's happening with AI disrupting everything, I mean, people are questioning their value as human beings.
That's right.
Your job as an executive right now in terms of people strategy is to recognize the human being sitting across from you because they feel unsettled.
That's right.
And they want, if you want someone to believe in your business, if they want someone to follow you and hitch their wagon to you, they have to know that you've got their back as a human being.
And that's
a very, very big challenge for some executives.
That's right. I mean, that's exactly what I teach. I teach people how can you be the leader that everyone wants to follow? And you do that through leadership empathy, which is one of the skills that I teach. And it's transformative to watch how it works.
It is. And I remember going to Columbia. I'd spent 20 years of finance. And the first day they were using words like love and everything. I said, this is ridiculous. Nobody uses those words.
Right.
But it, you know, when you see it used in different contexts and you give it meaning and you say, you know what, this is legitimate. This is valid.
That's right.
And you see the change that really happens. And when you put the filter on, if we have a filter that's too soft, we're dismissive of it. If we could put a filter on it and say, where's the validity in this? All of a sudden, it has legs and it starts to manifest in a different type of way.
For example, I mean, what I teach is based on neuroscience. It's not based on how we think the brain works. It's based on how the brain actually works. And, you know, the skills I teach, I've trained murderers to be peacemakers in maximum security prisons.
Yes.
Pretty powerful stuff. So you're right. It's all based on hard science, hard empirical data, and it's not soft.
It's not soft. No. And it's valid. It's and
absolutely valid.
And transformative. Transformative.
That's amazing. So we got a couple of minutes left. just share a couple of quick stories of some of the successes you've had with your clients.
Oh boy, some
of the successes. Of course.
So my favorite story, I was working with an executive who ran a large HR company. And he was just working primarily on time management. He said, I'm overwhelmed. I need to run this business better. We kind of worked on a whole bunch of things. His wife had reached out at the end of the engagement, invited me out to coffee and started crying at coffee because ultimately he was talking about his work life. But what was under the surface was how his home life was just mayhem with his kids and he wasn't spending. So she's like, life at home has completely changed. He's much more present. He's, you know, he's got control of his tasks at work and everything, but he's created his boundaries and we've done all these types of things. And that's my favorite story. And that was towards the beginning of when I really started coaching. And that was, that had real benefit. The business ended up growing significantly. They got acquired by another company and major success. So that was great. The business got under control and he was able to focus on his home life as well. So that was a nice personal story. But there have also been success stories in terms of having, one was a law firm where we had all the partners of the law firm working together. We found so many gaps in terms of the way that processes were working, by the way that they changed their questions and changed that we're interacting with each other. They found millions in lost revenue that they didn't know they had. And so that was fundamentally changing them from a business perspective. We found so much more business in terms of, we always think about lawyers in terms of hours billed and everything else. There was just revenue being lost based on judgment and working too quickly. And they weren't following the processes they needed to follow in terms of getting that business through the door. And it changed their trajectory as well. So from a business perspective, from a home perspective, we're taking personal capability and marrying it with corporate work. And most people don't do that, but that's ultimately what needs to happen in 2023.
It's critical. I mean, you can spend your whole life building business success and completely destroy your family life.
That's right.
So what I teach, the skills that I teach, for example, teach you how to not only deal with, listen to people at work, but at home, build intimacy and be able to listen to your kids and listen to your partner and create the same trust and loyalty that you create at work, you use the same skills to treat at home so that you don't sacrifice your family for your career.
And home is a great place for many of my executives to test out the behaviors.
That's right.
Before they bring it to the workplace.
Right.
Where you have a spouse, you obviously married them for some reason.
Right.
They should be your best partner in the world.
That's right.
This is a person who will help you develop, test out the behavior with them.
I love that.
And then come back and take it to the workplace too.
I love that. One more question and we'll wrap it up. A little more personal. So what would be one thing that we wouldn't know about you, Jim Frawley, unless you revealed it to us?
Oh boy, one thing. The big one that I always get asked about, 5 years ago, I quit drinking and it changed my business. So when I think about and much of the work, when I work with executives and we talk about the personal kind of micro focus, you focus on the physical, you focus on the mental, you focus on the social, what are the decisions you're making that will impact your ability to be successful? And one day I just woke up, I told my wife, I don't want to drink anymore. And that's it. And my business, I didn't realize how much it was affecting my business. Business tripled practically overnight.
Wow.
Right. I was having better conversations. I was focused. I was more present with my clients. I was doing all kinds of things. And so that was a really big one for me that people are always interested in hearing more about. But
really interesting. Well, thank you so much for your time, Jim. This has been a great conversation.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
Doug Knoll here. Thank you so much for listening to Listening with Leaders. If you are a successful executive leader who would like to be on this program, please visit podcast.dougnoll.com/podcast. If you got something out of this interview, would you please share this episode on social media? Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone that would be a great guest, tag them on the social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag #ListeningWithLeaders. I love seeing your posts and guest suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. Want to know more? Go to my website, DougKnoll.com, or follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. That's at Douglas E. Noel. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next show.